outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Oh, I finally made it to Michigan. 18 months too late in one sense, and maybe 2 weeks too early in another. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. This is the God Journey. I'm going to invite Kyle in just a moment, but before we do, let me catch up on a few things. Why did I say 18 months too late? Michigan was the first trip I had to cancel because of the pandemic. Supposed to be there in March of 2020. Made it there in September and finally got a chance to be with these three groups of people that wanted to connect with us. And before I left, actually, Kyle said he really wanted to go on a trip with me, and we decided this trip was a good one. So Kyle flew in from Wyoming, and we met each other there and spent 3 days hanging out with various pieces of the body of Christ in all kinds of different arrangements, from individual conversations over meals to groups getting together on decks and talking into the evening. So wonderful trip. We'll talk about it in just a moment as Kyle joins me. 2 weeks too late, though, or too early, might be because, well, I love fall, and I live in California, and fall out in California leaves a lot to be desired. Palm trees don't change beautiful colors in the fall, and I love that, whether it's in New England or Michigan. And I didn't really think about it when I scheduled this trip, but unfortunately, a little too early to enjoy the fall. And so a lot of trees that are, just have a little hint of color change at the very tips of the branches, but nothing that took my heart away except for one little tree. Saturday morning, we were headed out for breakfast, and as we were traveling down the freeway, I could see it a long ways off. There's this beautiful yellow, red, orange. And as we got closer, it was one tree in the midst of all these other green trees, dark green trees, because it's been a while over the summer. And here's this one tree that's in its full glory of the fall. It couldn't be a prettier tree. It couldn't be more full of color. And I can only sit there and imagine what it would look like if all the trees were that color, because that would be spectacular, but that's still a couple weeks out. But man, I tell you, that one little tree in offsetting with all the green around it really shows what the first fruits of something could look like. Can you imagine? That's what I thought of when I was there. The first fruits of God's glory shining fresh in a world that is filled with darkness and filled with animosity and filled with anger and filled of lots of other things. Those who are seeking to learn to live in the radiance of God's glory, and how that would shine out because of the contrast that there's nothing else around them. 2 weeks from now, that tree turning color at the same time, wouldn't have even noticed it. Just a little tree by the side of a road. But man, when it's the only one for miles around, and we drove all over Michigan, it really just spoke to my heart about praying for God's glory to begin to freshly emerge in the earth so that it's visible to people who aren't sure where God's voice lies these days and where his presence is and who to trust in terms of whether we're going to war and animosity or whether God's love's going to be displayed in a different way. And that touched my heart a whole lot. At the end of our trip, Sunday night, Kyle and I had a chance to sit down and kind of reminisce about the trip and kind of talk about some of the things that are current in our heart, which is the subject of today's podcast. So we're going to bring him in just a moment. I'm going to go to that recording, but let me warn you going in, the recording's a little rough. We had some technical issues that we didn't know about until after I'd gotten home, but the conversation was fresh enough and it was just all part of the week. So we're going to play it anyway. I've tried to beef up the audio where I could to help it make sense and be clear. And I think we got a pretty good rescue here. So I hope you enjoy it. This is Kyle and I at the end of our Michigan trip. Well, we left you last week with a cliffhanger. Is Kyle and Wayne travel compatible?
Ooh, yes.
And now we're 3 days into our Michigan experience. Now, what do you think? Are we travel compatible?
I think we are. I think so far, both of us are still alive.
Are you a glass half full kind of guy?
I am a glass half full type of guy, yes. Nothing is burnt down. As of right now, neither of us have any bodily lacerations, and we're sitting in the same room together.
Communicating.
Still okay.
And that's your standard for travel compatible.
Not quite.
We have achieved that travel compatibility.
But I think it's been we're actually currently sitting here in a great friend's living room in Grand Rapids, Michigan, instead of us having to do this remotely.
Or outside of Grand Rapids. Yeah, first time since you moved to Wyoming.
Yeah.
You visited one time. Yeah. We did a podcast.
Yep.
First time in a long time we've been in the same room and able to chat together. And what's the weekend been like for you, Kyle?
Wow, I don't really know even where to begin. It has been a weekend of unexpecteds. I was excited to just come and get to spend time with you and get to know more people in the Grand Rapids area. I love the Grand Rapids area. And yet, God has just had a lot of unique surprises waiting for me on this trip that I was not expecting. So it's been good. It's been very rich. What about you?
Oh, it's normal week for me on this kind of thing.
Yeah, how so?
Well, just I'm used to this kind of thing, which
Yeah.
is I'm not used to anything. Is I don't have an expectation going in. I don't have a goal I'm trying to meet. We're just spending time. This was 3 different days in 3 different areas, and then all the other stuff God puts around that. And it started
Yeah.
out with a couple of great conversations arriving here, connecting with some old friends, and then, man, we were off down to Otsego and had a serendipitous lunch with a pastor type, former pastor type, doing some really neat inner city loving. I
Yeah.
won't even say outreach because it's not that targeted. It's just loving a community of
Just
people.
being available.
Yeah, watching what God does. And then, yeah, so I love the variety of it. I love where we've been, who we've talked to, conversations we've spilled into, the way God has touched lives. It's not new to me, so.
Yeah.
You know,
No, that makes
it's
sense.
nice not having, conferences or lectures that I do. It's nice
Yeah.
that we just spill into a series of conversations and see what God does in people's lives. So
Well, and they were so diversified. I mean, there was groups where we were meeting in homes with, 15, 20 people. Then there was individuals. I mean, the one individual came in the coffee shop. I mean, he came with a mission. He sat down and he launched into a conversation. And man,
he
that was
just opened
into
up his heart
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
and opened up
Just
the frustration of trying to find a relationship with God that he hasn't found, and so has this view of God hiding from him in the corner
Oh.
till he finds just the right thing to do. And I know many people who feel the same way. I've met
Yeah.
many. And getting them to find a little bit of a different trailhead than they've got two. They've got one over here where I work my tail off and God should show up. And that one doesn't work. I
Yeah.
just, you can make it look like it works, but it doesn't. The other trail is I just forget about God entirely and just do my own thing. And so getting to see a third trail, which is how does God build this relationship with me? And that's, I think, where people get stuck. It's usually either expectations that are out of alignment with God's purpose, or it's I'm working too hard trying to make it happen.
Yeah.
That sounds weird because that's what we want to, religion teach people, we got to work hard. And we try and get people to say, no, I want you to relax into something God's already doing in your heart, you just don't see it.
Yeah. It was interesting. When he first sat down and started opening up his heart, hit me hard because it was like a snapshot to 2003, 2004, and just the frustration and the deep anger that he was experiencing. And you posed that question about doing, and where does your value come from, and where does that land for you? And I just remember back when somebody asked me a very similar question of if you couldn't do, and they posed the question like this: if you were to happen to be paralyzed and were not able to really give any kind of feedback, not be able to respond to anybody, but just be cared for by another person, what would your thoughts be? And my response immediately, without hesitation, is I'd rather be dead. If I can't do, if I can't serve, if I can't be a part of another person's life, if I can't help, then what point do I have in living? There's no value to my life whatsoever if I can't do. And hearing that young man and just the pain and the frustration and the anger of over 7 years of asking, are you actually there? God, are you in the room with me and not hiding from me, but are you actually intentionally engaging with me?
And some people would see that as not a problem with that kind of response.
Yeah.
Born to serve, need to serve, find my
Absolutely.
identity in serving. But you would say it's not necessarily a healthy way to approach life.
Oh, absolutely not. No. No. It led to some very, very dark roads.
Well, flesh that out a little bit, because I think religion often makes us hard workers. We need to be at the servant of all. So I need to be serving. And a lot of people, service to the kingdom, and I met someone recently, we were talking the same kind of language. Their service to the kingdom was their identity. Mm. And that sounds wonderful, but it's not. It's a deceptive trap because you're finding your worth not in who you are mm-hmm. and God's affection for you. You're finding it in doing something for other people, which then really isn't service because you're doing it for you.
Oh, absolutely. Right. And that's the conversation came up about Awanas and the vest. And I mean, that just took me back because I was like, oh yeah, did I look like a budding rock star at age 7 when my vest is covered with badges that I had won in all these scripture memorizing contests and even pitted up against other churches? And I was blasting these kids with my ability to be able to remember scripture. And yeah, was it a badge of honor? Was it very, very Pharisaical? Absolutely. I would have been a rock star right alongside of Paul. And yet it was so lifeless.
And also very addictive.
Thinking yeah, absolutely.
Because I was same boat. Thinking yourself as superior
yes.
to those who didn't have as many merit badges.
Yeah, Bible verses yes.
That's a point made in that So You Don't Want a Church Anymore. Simply the corruptibility of gold star discipleship. Does it hurt the kid who doesn't have parents supportive of a journey so he never gets any stars? Yeah, yeah. It hurts him.
Yeah.
But I would argue it hurts more the person that's got all the gold stars filled out, because now they're
agreed.
Wired to finding their purpose in the addictedness of serving in some way that's significant to God. And you chase that your entire life. And it's never good enough, never enough, until you come to rest in the Father's affection for you, just for who you are.
Honestly, that's why I think success is more dangerous than failure. Because when we are successful in those areas, when we get the merit badges, it makes that road that much more difficult to get off of.
For sure.
Because we've gotten the feedback, we've gotten the adoration, we've gotten the golden star from the people around us that are saying, oh yeah, no, this is what it means to be a good Christian. And well, look at me, I've got this trophy, I've got this badge, I've won this award.
And parents are saying to their kids, why can't you be more like Kyle?
Oh, absolutely. And if you hear that once, it's like, how is that not going to puff your chest up?
And how is it not going to destroy the kid that goes, oh, you don't
oh,
have
man.
Kyle is your kid than me.
Yeah.
All of that influence is so corrupting. And here you're seeing the fruit of it years down the road of, I'm still working this a wanna earn it approach to God, and it's not working. And now I know it's not working.
Yeah.
The accolades are not enough anymore. It's not sustained the journey or the hunger of my heart. And so now when I reject that, I don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
And what a great conversation to say, could you just suspend your belief for a moment that you have to earn this?
Yeah.
That there is a way to earn it. That there is another conversation we got into. Is there a program that guarantees discipleship?
Oh, yes.
To a guy that was, yes. like me, designed his own a number of years ago. You had checklists and things. And is there a program? And there's that quest to find one, whether it's your
own absolutely.
Or you've read on this, you know, all, he gave us a bunch of.
Oh, he gave us a ton of different programs to use.
And then he's going, well, there must be any. You see, and I just said, do you think if there was one, Jesus would have handed it to his disciples? Hmm. And to me, that's what racked my soul when that question was in my head, if this is what I wanted, wouldn't I have given it to you?
Yeah.
If a systematic theology is important to this journey of faith, wouldn't I have brought that to you
yeah.
instead of letting these disciples try and retell my story, you know? And that's why Jesus left us with his spirit and the growing dependence on him. And I've loved that journey. I've loved that we've been able to talk to people about that. And
yeah.
I think it's been a fruitful week. And we didn't kill each other, you're right.
We didn't.
Who knows when, how we do that again. This was tough, I think, because it was a trip that I was invited on, and
yeah.
then you tagged along. So it wasn't like we were here together and people were coming for in the future, if we do it, obviously it'd be more of a God journey trip instead of a Wayne Jacobson trip. And people will come. But you chimed in a lot. You've had some really wonderful things to say to people, and some things you're yet going to say to some of the people you met, that God put some stuff on your heart that I think will be really incredibly liberating to them.
An intriguing process, though. I just today, when we were sitting down with that group, and listening to their stories and listening to just the unique and beautiful ways that God surprises us with his love sometimes. And thinking back to, it's been a really interesting, honestly, this weekend has been a really interesting highlight reel of seeing a young man that was me 15 years ago. And then getting into conversations about ways that we get surprised by love. And God just literally, as we're sitting there talking, he's taking me through highlight reels of ways that he surprised me with his love. And now...
And we had a man in the room who was actually surprised by his love in the room.
Yes, because of a word
I wrote on a piece of paper. And he just like lit up because that confirmed something that God was pressing on him that morning.
Yeah.
I love that stuff.
And to navigate through that and say, Lord, what a beautiful journey that you have us on. And to, because at least for me anyway, I find that so often when I'm in the midst of it, I'm in the midst of life, I'm in the midst of the process, I often don't think back to where has God taken me over the last several years and what does this journey look like? And just reflecting back on the incredible interventions and things that he's done in my life. And man, it was humbling this weekend. And then getting to actively watch other people enjoy that too. I mean, I could have sat back and watched him resonate with the word truth all day long. And to see the joy that washed over his face and just the boom, aha collision of... holy cow, there's a God in the universe that genuinely loves me, and he just showed up uniquely for me with a word that I didn't even know I needed. And yet it connected so deeply with him.
Really is much simpler than we dare to believe.
It really is.
Compare this to the old Wayne who used to teach a lot of seminars and do a lot of stuff instead of just sit on a porch a Michigan evening hoping a conversation will happen that will be life-giving. Conversation last night where the first person out of the gate opens up about some frustrated attempt to get to healing of a severe pain in their medical condition that's painful, and opened up the whole night about how do we walk with God, not focused on the outcome, but focused on the process.
So, yeah.
Fun stuff. So best thing you heard this week.
Oh, geez. I knew you were going to ask me this, and I was like, dang it, I didn't have my journal with me all week. Or all weekend, and there were so many good things. Oh, honestly,
you sweat. I love it.
The thing that really has connected with me is we've been talking a little bit about the Tower of Babel, where there's this confusion that's taking place, and it clicked for me this weekend. I've heard you say it. I was like, yeah, I feel like there or sense like there's truth in that, but I'm not connecting it yet. And then when I really thought about my frustration of people can't even agree on the details of the situation that we're fighting about, that was just like, boom. I've thought about that before, but really reflecting on that thought and my frustration there, it just took me to that space of, yeah, it's a genuine confusion. How can you even, somebody over here speaking French, and I'm over here speaking Dutch, and we can't even start to have a conversation because we can't even connect with one another. Right. And that, man, that hit home this weekend.
That's cool. Great.
What about you?
I'm reading The Divine Comedy.
Ooh, okay.
And I'm not getting help. I've tried to read it before. It's just bored out of my mind. It's poetry, and it's referring to archaic historical things that, I mean, you have to study.
Yeah.
The Divine Comedy. You can't just read it unless you're a history prof that's got all your Greek and Roman mythology down to a science. And so Christianity Today started 100 Days of Dante, where three times a week you read a canto, which is a short poetic chapter. It's kind of like canto, short for song. So you read one of those. And there's 33 poems that lead down to hell as he goes to the depths of hell.
Okay.
And there's 33 of these that take him through purgatory, which I don't believe in purgatory, but... part of the study is to say, what was this middle-aged church teaching?
Yeah.
What was the fear? And some of it's really fascinating so far. And then there's 34 about paradise, 100 total. And they're calling it 100 Days of Dante, but it's 3 days a week through now till Easter.
Really?
And you give you a reading, you just read online.
Yeah.
You have to buy the book. And then you get a 10-minute thing from a professor who loves that canto and loves the Divine Comedy and kind of walks into it. And Canto 6 is about gluttony and how God deals. And honestly, the punitive God in eternity, which is you screwed up here, so now you're going to get something worse here that plays in. I'm not into that.
Yeah.
But the unpacking of what gluttony, this about gluttony, what gluttony does to us. And it wasn't just food gluttony. Those of you who like food, don't just check out this, but he talked about the craving for gluttony, the craving for the dopamine-induced pleasure we want rather than the nourishment we actually need. This is true whether we seek that pleasure from food and drink, sex and money, or knowledge, which he means gossip, secret knowledge, and power. So food and drink, sex and money, knowledge or power, and then this is what this professor said. I love this. Dante tutors our intellect when he helps us to see our gluttony is a capacious vice associated with the compulsive desire that misshapes our body, political power that misshapes our communities, and secret information or gossip that misshapes our souls.
Oh, jeez. Okay, I'm going to be tracking that study, by the way.
Oh, I'm still chewing on that.
Oh my gosh.
Wow, what a way to see that. And I'm in a situation right now where that secret information gossip, and it's not even true information, it's trading in false information, is incredibly destructive. And people who parlay in it are completely uncaring about the destruction their voice causes. And I'm not saying, okay, now they need to really be punished in hell. That's not why I'm reading the Divine Comedy. But I love seeing that depiction where sin really becomes as ugly as it is in our thinking. So if I've got a problem with these things, the quest for political power, secret information, to realize how it misshapes my own soul, plus whoever it is that I'm gossiping about, and it makes you just kind of turn back to Jesus and say, I want life here, man. I've got to find some freedom from this. So.
And I love the depiction of secret knowledge, because how better way to frame social media? How better way to frame what takes place and what makes it so addicting? Because it's that dopamine hit, right? From this secret knowledge where you're putting that information out there, it's gossip about, or it's this quote unquote information, insider information.
Yeah, inside to my tribe.
Yes, exactly. And yet, how often is it false or distorted or so far from the actual image of what's going on behind the scenes? It's this facade, this veneer, and yet that's the life we project.
And the damage of it is so obvious in our culture right now.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Unless you're on a side that you think you're right and the other side's causing the damage.
Yeah.
Then when you know that, you know you're on a tribe.
Yeah.
Being destructive.
Yeah.
Because both tribes are, both left and right. And the delusion you talked about earlier, one of the things I notice about deluded people, said this in an article, like, when you disagree with them, anger is the first response.
Instant.
Yeah, anger and threat, because it's a threat thing. They feel like their view is threatened if someone disagrees with them.
Which, as we talked about before, that translates back to their core identity. Yeah. It's not just their opinion. It's not just the gossip. It's you're threatening a part of my soul. You're threatening a part of my identity. And if you dare try to take that away from me, then you're taking away a part of my soul, a part of my value, a part of who I am as a person.
I got this email this week, and that was hilarious. I wrote to you about 2 years ago when I started reading your book, Funding God.
Funding God?
We're in the process of leaving our church.
I missed that title.
Absolutely. I laughed so hard. She meant Finding Church, but I just, Funding God. There's a book there. There's a book to be
there made. Is. Funding there God. Is. I'll call Jess and let her know we got a new title we're going to put through Blue Sheep.
Author who can write to the magnificence of that title. Funding God.
Jeez.
Which really flies in the face of, what is it, Psalm maybe 99. You know, God, I own the cattle on a thousand hills. I don't need your money. Don't think your tithe is about me needing your money. I own everything. And the whole idea. But that's what a lot of times we're raising money to fund God's program.
Oh, yeah.
In the world. We're funding God. What a great title. Hilarious. I owe that woman if we ever use it. But.
We'll give her some royalties. We'll write her into the contract.
Yeah, we could do it.
Have you listened to the most recent Mars Hill podcast?
Yeah, there's two new ones up that we haven't even talked about at all.
Yes.
But yeah.
So like the most recent one that just came out.
Yeah.
Man, that honestly, that one, the last 23 minutes roughly, just absolutely rocked me to my core. It talked about the journey, the road between popularity, so celebrity, and saint. And that, I feel like that is the seductive offer that every single young person is being faced with in today's world. Yeah, every single one.
And to reset that, for those of you who don't know, the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill is a podcast Christianity Today is doing.
Yep.
We've been following it a bit because it's way beyond Mars Hill. And
yes.
That's kind of the touchstone for it, the example in it. But it really speaks to the whole of Christendom and how we've dealt with things. And so this was the Bobby Knight problem.
Yes. Yep. That's the name.
The leader is so popular for the results that he gets that his abusive behavior goes ignored or justified by people until it's too late.
And that the system is so now so committed to the brand of this one individual that they're willing to insulate him from the repercussions of their decisions.
And you said Bobby Knight is a basketball coach, University of Indiana, who was throwing chairs across things, choking athletes. I mean, the guy was just out of control, but he was Indiana basketball.
Absolutely. He personified Indiana basketball.
And that's the religion, they say, in Indiana, like football is in Oklahoma and Texas. And yes, they said the same thing was going on with Mark Driscoll. And then he talks about these two iconic women who died in the same year.
Yes. So he talks about Mother Teresa and he talks about Princess Diana and how they were the two most recognizable women in the world at that time. And yet he talks about Princess Diana and how the world sold, everybody wants to be Princess Diana. And yet they make the comment that nobody could be her. Like, there's only one person who can marry the Prince of Wales. There's a very tiny percentage of people that fit the social, economical, or social norms of her level of beauty and attraction. And yet, that's what was placed on the front of news and media as the life to aspire to. That's where real life is to be found. And yet, then you have Mother Teresa, who lived an absolutely incredible life, had impact all over the world, had influence on some of the top leaders in the world, but she lived this different life, serving the most broken people on the planet. And one of the things that really struck me the most on that is that we don't like the seasons of obscurity or the seasons of perceived ineffectiveness. That we want to be molded and formed and transformed on the front of the stage where all can look at adoration at our beauty and our glory as we continue to ascend to this whole nother level. And yet the vision of the saint is somebody who is willing to live their life in obscurity, potentially, and in the fringes, not on the front page, and yet serving from the heart, serving from a space where they have something set before them. They have that joy or that vision that God has placed on their heart, set before them, that they're willing to live for, that they're willing to give it all for. And just that journey of that and how that can have such a powerful impact and how literally anybody could live the life of the saint. Literally anybody can take that journey where they say, Lord, what journey of service, what people group, who have you put around me in my world that you want me to be, to share your love with? And I want to give my life to that. I want to give my life to dedicating to showing them what it means to be loved by you.
That's what I was most taken by in that little 20-minute clip.
Yeah.
The fact that anybody can be a Mother Teresa, and that line is empty. You know, people lined up for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody wants to be, not necessarily marry the Prince of Wales, but you want to climb to the top of whether it's the music profession, the best-selling author, biggest church pastor. Everybody's trying to climb that wall of celebrity without service.
Yes.
Because it's celebrity for privilege. It's celebrity for, which feeds your ego, it feeds all that stuff, and the whole, well, you said social media, everybody's trying to find out how they can become an influencer with
Yes.
Hundreds of thousands of followers. That's not my generation, right? That's more your generation.
Yes, and the one coming up after me, yeah.
The influencer type, and there's people my age definitely that play the celebrity game, mm-hmm. to try and parlay their ministry into something bigger or their music into something bigger. Literally, anybody can do the serving.
Yeah.
And that line's empty. Everybody wants to be a celebrity, and there's only 0.001% of people ascend to the dream everybody has.
Yeah.
And then we talked about today how the persistent message in our culture of anybody who reaches some kind of surprise success is my life proves that anybody can have this.
Yes.
Anybody can do this. Anybody can write a best-selling movie. Anybody. And the fact is there is not enough opportunity so that anybody gets to do those things. I watch my grandson playing Little League or playing basketball, and you go, most of those kids dream of being a major league player.
Yeah.
And yet maybe one athlete in 20 years might come from my entire county that gets into a professional league somewhere.
Yeah.
And so the opportunity is incredibly minuscule, and all the dead dreams. So everyone's standing up there saying, anybody can do this.
Yeah.
Flies in the face of 10,000 musicians in Nashville looking for a place.
Yes, yes.
And it's not a matter of who's most gifted. Most times, yeah, some people get to the top are truly, truly gifted singers.
Yeah.
But I know truly, truly gifted singers who aren't known.
Yeah.
Who have tried to climb, that takes breaks, and it takes somebody to believe in you and promote you. And it takes, often as your wife's case in acting, it takes somebody willing to shout no to their yuck meter.
Yes.
To go down the road of being merchandised.
Yes.
And being pimped out for whatever celebrity you want. And that's always, I think, the hidden cost of celebrity.
Yeah.
To get to that point, you have to damage your soul to take a position of priority in any endeavor you do. And if it happens to you serendipitously, which it does to some, it just, you know, something hits big out of nowhere. But then trying to stay there is what misshapes them.
Yes.
Because now I've had this thing, I've got to keep it going, and now I'm losing audience share, influence share. And, you know, the whole social media thing is so capricious. A million followers one day, say something that's misinterpreted, or somebody finds something you said in a podcast 25 years ago. Well, it wouldn't be 25 years ago on a podcast. It could be like 15.
Yeah.
And then everybody's gone.
Yeah.
And all your financial backers and celebrity stuff is
out the window.
Yeah, and a lot of that is, you've said this to young people you were talking about the other day, which I love, which is you have no idea. You think somebody just got on YouTube and hit a market.
Yeah.
You have no idea how manipulated that is behind the scenes and how much money goes into crafting somebody wants to make a celebrity.
Yes.
The money they put behind it. And most of those fail. Even still,
absolutely.
Most of those fail.
Absolutely. And even then, you think about the young people in the last 3 or 4 years that have hit it, that have made that influencer status, that have gotten there, that have had the multi-million followers, multi-million dollar contracts. And where do we see them in the news? Not having a positive impact on society. We see them in the news because they've committed suicide. They reached the pinnacle of this experience that was sold to them as, if you want to know life, this is where you have to go.
This is the life worth living.
This is the life worth living. And they reach it, they hit the pinnacle of it, and find it just as empty as when they started the journey.
Or even the ministry people, pastors.
Oh, absolutely. Any genre.
Get to that pinnacle. And they may not off themselves.
Yeah, correct.
But they're going to commit career suicide because that wasn't fulfilling enough. So the women that have been drawn into my orbit, the chance for money that I want to make, ends up that corruption becomes clear because they're seeking that same fulfillment that the social media or the ministry popularity didn't bring.
Yes.
In indulging, going back to this gluttony thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Trying to medicate my dopamine because that's what you get hooked on.
Yeah.
And social media was designed to hook your dopamine.
Yes, it was.
But accolades do it. Success, when people put you on a pedestal, does it. And at the end of it, I love knowing this, it's at the end, it's fruitless. Not just for the kingdom, it's futile in your own soul. And that's why there's no church big enough that the pastor has to keep pursuing more. And
if absolutely.
The audience declines, the dopamine goes away, or what we thought was the blessing of the Holy
yes.
Spirit goes away.
Yes.
And I thought my joy was full. Your joy was full in the success thing you thought of. And I know many people who don't have that success, but seek it and frustrate that they don't have it. There's 42 years of my life. You can describe it right there.
Hmm.
I expected to be a more popular author. I expected my first book to, the Naked Church was going to shatter the world. The church was begging for this answer. It wasn't. It was out of print in 2 years, retitled, tried again. That didn't do well. That stuff is devastating when you're living for that as your identity. And I was. And now I look back saying, man, this trip, we have a meeting. One guy shows up at a meeting that was open to a broad public. And most people consider that a failure. That was a gift to that guy.
Yes, it was.
Us being there and our hosts with that one guy who's got the floor and can put all the stuff on the table. He has an incredible opportunity to see what goes, and I think he will.
I do too.
And in the old way of measuring success, that's not good.
Where are the numbers? You can't go back home to your board and say, I impacted 15,000 people in the Grand Rapids area, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure I would if I spoke to 15,000. To me, the conversations with the people we've touched and the things that come up from their own life, there's no sermon that can anticipate what people are struggling with and what key might unlock it. We have a better chance when we're in a conversation and they're expressing it. And then the connection is there and life happens. And so yeah, it's been a good trip.
It has
been fun to be with you. It's the first time we've actually been on the road together.
Yeah.
And we definitely have different lifestyle choices and bedtimes and some of those things. But we've survived it.
We have.
And, we're both going home tomorrow, back to our life as we know it. And
our lovely wives.
Me too, a week away with Sarah. We were supposed to be going somewhere else, couldn't do it because of the pandemic, but we're still taking a week just to be us because vacation was not very restful this season for some personal reasons. So we're
finding
some time together. And then I'm off to Alaska and beyond that to Virginia and see where else God has for me. And we'll see where we next coincide in the world.
I know. It might be in December in the ranch outside of Colorado Springs. That might be the next time I see you.
And Jess told me on this podcast to let you know what the gender of your next child is. I'm kidding. She knows, but she hasn't told Kyle.
She knows. That's waiting for me when I land. She knows.
So we got to get you out of here, man.
I know. Can't wait.
We'll see you next week.
All right. Sounds great.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.